Next, we have Just Josh May from your program. Can you hear me okay? All right. Josh May is a writer, producer, picker, and grinner from Magoffin County, Kentucky, now serving as Apple Shop's communications and marketing director. Josh has also served as communications consultant for Apple Shop's Appalachian Media Institute, as well as producer for June Apple Recordings.
Thank you. All right, so...
Do you have your power cord? Do you want to plug it in?
I just need audio right now. I'll be okay.
Wait for it to come up before I switch it over.
All right. I've got one image to show, if we can get it up here.
We're doing really good on time, so...
Okay, great. Yeah. Yeah, you can just kill the screen and we'll do audio. All right, so obviously I'm not Jack Wright, Rich Kirby, and Josh May. I am Josh May, and I'm Communications and Marketing Director at Apple Shop. If I was trying to be vindictive, I could say maybe Rich and Jack aren't getting around as well as they used to. but I won't do that, or I might. So I'm here to tell y'all a little bit about a record label called June Apple Recordings. It's an imprint of Apple Shop, which is an organization in Whitesburg, Kentucky, right on the Virginia-Tennessee line, right in the southeast corner of Kentucky in the mountains. And Apple Shop is a pretty special place. It's a lot of things. It started out as the Community Film Workshop of Appalachia as a project of the War on Poverty in the late 60s. And the big idea was, all these folks in low-income communities, if we just taught them how to use movie cameras, they could join this blossoming TV radio broadcast industry, and we'll lift them all out of poverty. It didn't work out so well. What folks quickly learned that is, if you get trained in broadcast media technology to get a job in that field, you very quickly have to move away from the mountains for that to be a viable living. So we had all these young folks in just graduated high school in Whitesburg, Kentucky. They had 16 millimeter cameras that were bigger than they were, and they were real excited about getting out and using them. And so what happened is the folks that were in the first round of the Community Film Workshop, they very quickly moved from a goal of getting jobs in broadcast and media industries to making media about the place where they were from, which is in the heart of Appalachia. Y'all might have heard of a fellow named Harry Cottle. He is from Whitesburg, Kentucky. Wrote a book called Night Comes to the Cumberlands, brought a whole lot of attention on this little area, and it wasn't always pretty, and it wasn't always productive. And you have pieces like Christmas in Appalachia, Walter Cronkite, all the way up through Barbara Walters 5 years ago, that come into this place and find the dirtiest ramshackle house that they can find and line a bunch of kids up in front of it and say, this is Appalachia, right? But the people that lived there saw a lot more than that. They knew that that was an oversimplification of the place and the culture and the people. And so they started making movies about that place. And so now Apple Shop is 45 years old, and they're still making movies about the place. And they also do a whole lot of other stuff, which I'll get to. But the key to Apple Shop's philosophy is making media about a place by the people from the place telling their own story. And that's the inherent power in this media. And it also informs the work of June Apple Recordings. Before we get into June Apple, so I'll say this. Apple Shop started in 1969, made a ton of documentary films within the first 5 years. And then by the mid-70s, had started a record label, a touring theater company. Later on, they had a community theater project, Roadside Theater, that's still going. There's a youth media project there, the Appalachian Media Institute. There's a community radio station, WMMT, and then there's June Apple Records, and it's all under the umbrella of Apple Shop, which is a nonprofit organization. So I get the pleasure of working with all these projects and distilling 45 years of multimedia into a message today, which is always a challenge and most often is rewarding. So, June Apple Records was started in 1974. There was a bunch of young folks in the mountains that were excited about being from the mountains, which was a new thing at the time. And they were playing all kinds of music. They were hearing this amazing music around them from old folks and young folks, and they wanted an outlet for it. And I could go into this whole story about Rounder Records and how far away that D.C. and New York seemed at the time, but what happened was these young people, Jack Wright was one of them who founded June Apple Records, just took it into their own hands, like they had learned the lessons from making movies that you can make audio from your place, about your place, and do it yourself. And oftentimes that's the only way that you can really tell the story that you want to tell, right? So they started in 1974, and in the words of Jack Wright, the record label instantly became a folklorist nightmare, because they started with the twin goal, right, to document the traditions and the music of the place where they were at in Kentucky, in Eastern Kentucky, as well as having the goal of recording, distributing, and promoting their own music, which is new music, right? They're young folks. And so from the very beginning, they engaged in this tradition of creation that's very much part of all folk music, which is like it's a reciprocal thing, right? It's not just something that is delivered and set in stone and that's how that song is. It is very much a process of creation that involves the listener and their interpretation and their communication with the performer. And it's an iterative cycle that is not linear at all, right? So when you have a record label that starts in the early 70s, when folks are really trying to pin down folk traditions and what does this all mean and what school is this from and what region and what tradition, and then you have a record label that's putting all that out alongside brand new songs that folks have written, new folk music. And in my mind and in the minds of a lot of people that are familiar with the label, it makes complete sense. But if you're trying to figure it out from the outside, it sometimes gets a little fuzzy. But so June Apple started, the first record, June Apple number one, is by a fellow named Nimrod Workman. And I don't know if y'all have heard of Nimrod Workman. He was a coal miner. He was born in Martin County, Kentucky. He moved right over the line near Kermit, West Virginia, and worked his whole life there. Nimrod was in the coal mines for 42 years, and the day that he quit work, they had to drag him out of the mines because he was so disabled. He worked until he literally couldn't get out. And from that day, it took him 20 more years to get disability and black lung benefits from a coal company that claimed that there was nothing wrong with him, even though they had to drag him out of the mines to get him out of there. So, as you can imagine, he came up pretty rough, and he had a strong spirit. And this fella, just by the very nature of his reality, was politicized from a very young age, and just from his personal experience working in the coal mines, he got involved in union organizing, and he went out to all kinds of union rallies across the mountains and would sing and perform and wrote songs about coal mining and about the union and about how much it meant to him. And he was a union man 100% is what he would say. And he organized alongside with Mother Jones. He was right there at the Battle of Blair Mountain. He was involved in some really deep labor struggles that happened in our region. And he's, aside from all this social context, he's an amazing performer. And he recorded songs from a deep tradition that no one else ever recorded. And on the same album, June Apple Number One, he recorded songs that he wrote himself and songs that he co-wrote with the producer of the album, Jack Wright. And so it raises all these questions about what is authentic folk music. And you can spend a lot of time dealing with the words and how do you classify this? But I think the music really speaks for itself. And I want to play you all a song by Nimrod Workman here. Yeah, yeah. And this is a song that he wrote called 42 Years. And I think you've got enough context on it, so it's a short song. I'll just play it here.
For 42 years, I worked in a coal mine, and I've got had 13 children, 49 grandchildren. I composed this song and made it where that I'd worked and bruised my knees down in coal mine knee pad. This song is 42 years. For 42 years is a mighty long time to labor and toil down in a coal mine. But down in that deep hole where the bright light did glow, back in a dark room, I was fading up cold. My bones, they did ache me. My kneecaps got bad. Down on that hard rock, on a set of knee pads.
All right, so there you get it. It goes, cuts right to the bone, right? It's pretty chilling stuff. So this was the first record that Jude Apple released. Jack Wright produced it. Nimrod and his daughter Phyllis Boyens are on the album. And Phyllis does an amazing job in her own right. If her father wasn't Nimrod Workman, she would probably be more well known on her own because she's an amazing singer and songwriter and collector of songs. Nimrod had this way about him that even in up into his 80s, it was like you were looking at a little kid, and it's in his eyes, right? Want me to rub on this some more? Nimrod, this is the first album on June Apple Records. It came out 40 years ago this year, and just to tell you a little bit about what we're up to, we're reissuing this album on LP in digital download format also, and it's on the 40th anniversary of the album. We're having a festival called Seed Time on the Cumberland. It's in its 28th year now. It's Apple Shop's annual festival of traditional arts. And we're having a June Apple at 40 get together. Jack and a bunch of the folks are coming together for a concert. Nimrod's stepson and grandson are going to be there. There's going to be so much Nimrod there that if you like Nimrod, you should come out to see time. Could I get the screen for just a second? Let me show you all this picture of this man. So there's Nimrod Workman. And here he's doing a little move called the crab walk, which I've never seen anyone else do in my life of any age. And then here's the Seed Time Festival. So we'll leave this up for a second. We're talking about preservation here, so I can get into a little bit of the technical weeds. I know if I'm ever going to get technical, this is probably the place to do it. This was recorded on quarter-inch tape, 1973 and 74, and was wound as tight as humanly possible and then put in a box for 30 years. And there was never any digitization process that happened in that time until about 5 years ago when a fellow named Rich Kirby that works at Apple Shop got the tape back out, and we did a pass and digitized it. And the tape physically was in fine condition. We baked it, et cetera, and transfer went well, but there was this issue of print through or bleed through where the tape had been wound so tight for so long, and it was pretty thin tape to start with. And I'm an audio engineer also. That's a big part of my background. And this was one of the hardest cleanup jobs I've ever taken on in my life, was cleaning up this print through from this tape. And so I'll show you all my process, and I know I'm in a room of engineers, et cetera, here, so I might be opening myself up a little bit with this. But I'll show you all my process for working on this print through. So I'm using a program here called Reaper that, if you don't know about it, I highly recommend. I quit Pro Tools and started using Reaper. So here you have. So basically, you heard Richard Nevins saying this morning that sometimes there's no substitution for riding a fader, and I have to agree with that completely. And so that's what I did here with this. I'm going to play you all so the sample of audio that you heard of 42 years was my cleaned up, edited version of that audio. And now I can show you all what this sounds like. So basically what you see here is I took the audio from the cassette tape, and the bleed through is, you mostly hear it in the quiet parts. It's a very dynamic recording, so it was hard to do, and pretty mostly a cappella. But what you have here is a doubling up of the tracks, and you know, the EQ that it took to get rid of this bleed through was horrible. It was so much EQ, and it's so destructive. And so I didn't want to affect any of the sound of Nimrod's voice or the performance with this horrible EQ. So what we did was I doubled the tracks up, EQ'd one of them, hit all the bleed through frequencies really hard, and then just rode the faders. You see, this is automation, but it's basically riding a fader, right? These envelopes, and it's like a ducking process where the silent parts where the bleed through comes through the most, you take them out and replace it with the EQ'd signal, or you fade them in and out and switch back and forth, right? And so you end up with the performance unaffected, the quality of the voice unaffected, and then the silent parts, the bleed through is gone. And you maintain your noise floor, and in my opinion, it was the best results that I could come up with on this bleed through issue.
You're gonna play us the original now.
Yeah, yeah, I'm working on that.
I thought you recorded a quarter inch tape and not a cassette. I mean, was the original recording made on?
A quarter inch, yeah. Yeah, it was on quarter inch. Yeah. And so I would be curious to hear if anybody else has dealt with this bleed through, print through issue. What do you all think? Has anybody had experience with this firsthand? Is this new ground here? I know the bleed through is not new ground. I know all kinds of people deal with that. Do you want to hear the bad audio really
yes.
bad?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty bad. Uh-huh. Okay, so here you go. Here's 42 years without any automation. We got audio? No, we don't. I better cut this up. All right, here we go.
42 years I worked in a coal mine, and I've got had 13 children, 49 grandchildren. I composed this song and made it where that I'd worked and bruised my knees down in coal mine knee pads. This song is 42 years. For 42 years is a mighty long time to labor and toil down in a coal mine. But down in that deep hole where the bright light did glow, back in a dark room I was spading up coal. My bones, they did ache.
I'm not hearing it either. Should we blame room acoustics?
No.
Maybe let's blame that song was on the end of the tape, on the outside of the roll. So let's hear another part.
Up in his bosom, saying, here's that prize that you have won. A staff is brave, bold lieutenant. Saying, man, am I, I'm a man of war. But over these hills and woods I'll ramble. And my face.
You don't hear it?
You. No.
But maybe.
There's some volume variations in that song.
Well, if anybody's interested, we can go over this with headphones. I brought some headphones. Anyway, we won't get too caught up on this. There is print through, I can assure you. These, or else I just made thousands of edits on this piece of audio for no reason. Yeah, let's do that. Okay, so anyway, this was a meticulous process involving hundreds of edits that I don't care to count. So we can lose the visual again, so we can just hear audio. So I'll tell you all a little bit about myself, how I came to June Apple Records and Apple Shop. I'm from Magoffin County, Kentucky, which actually there's more people at this conference that know about Magoffin County than most people I talk to in Kentucky don't even know where it's at. But I grew up in a place called Falcon, right across the hill from Mash Fork, Kentucky, which is where a fellow by the name of Buell Kazee grew up. And Buell Kazee was an amazing banjo player, singer, and a preacher for most of his life. Buell's nephew, by the name of Ned Kazee, was the song leader in the church where I grew up and was raised up. And Ned would, right before the sermon every Sunday, Ned would get up on the podium there, on the pulpit, and sing a song a cappella. And it was just haunting, and I hadn't heard anything like it at the time as a kid. And Ned would tell me he had an uncle that played banjo, and people knew him for it. And I was always curious about that. It took me years and years to figure out who he was talking about, even though Kazee is not that common of a name. When I heard Buell Kazee for the first time, it was like I was sitting in the church pew and hearing Ned sing a cappella. And their voice was so close together that you probably couldn't identify the difference without seeing them. So Buell, even before I started playing music, Buell was a big influence on my life, and the Kazees were an amazingly musical family. Buell is the reason I picked up the banjo, really, and still trying to sound like him and still failing miserably. So Buell Kazee has a record on June Apple Records, and it was one of the early ones that came out. And for folks that haven't heard Buell, I want to play just a clip of this. There's really nobody like him. Here's a little bit of Buell Kazee. So there's a little bit of Buell, and if anybody's ever heard anybody that plays banjo like that, please tell me about it. I'd like to hear it. So June Apple Records, 40 years old this year. Obviously, there's been a lot that's changed in the past 40 years. The label has now seen 5 different recording formats. Some people say 4, but I consider the internet a recording format. Not personally, but it's a way that people consume media, and it's becoming more of a player all the time. But there are June Apple Records, because of this fact, there are June Apple Records that exist only on audio cassettes. That was the only way they were ever released. That was the only way they were mastered. It's the only copies that we have even at Apple Shop. There are 45s, there are LPs, And then there's a tons of reels of tape that a lot of this stuff has not been digitized yet. And so this work that I've done with the Nimrod record is really one of the first steps in the process of digitizing 40 years of mountain music. But thankfully, through the support of the NEH and a lot of other foundations, et cetera, Apple Shop has its own archive now that's in Whitesburg, Kentucky. We've got a vault and all that good stuff. And so we're taking care of what we do have, and we're working on digitizing it. And it's a process. It is a process. So June Apple has a lot of momentum this year. It's the 40th anniversary, obviously, so people are excited about that. I'm really excited about a new release on the label. So June, Seed Time's happening, and this Nimrod record is getting reissued, right? That's going to be available at the beginning of June. There's also a new album coming out. It's June Apple number 87, and it's a fellow you may or may not have heard of named Charlie Stamper. You probably heard of his brother, Art Stamper, and you might have heard of his dad, Hiram Stamper. Charlie, though, he's 84 years old now. He lives out in Cadiz in western Kentucky, and he was recorded for the first time in his life just a few months ago by a fellow by the name of J.D. Wilkes, who wrote a book called Barn Dances and Jamborees Across Kentucky. It's a pretty new book that's out. It's pretty great. But he found Charlie Stamper in the course of writing that book, who was just playing at dances out in Cadiz, Kentucky, and sat down with him right before he had to go in for a chemo treatment and recorded a session. And it's amazing fiddle playing, and we're going to be releasing a CD and LP of Charlie Stamper that'll be his first release of his music in his lifetime. That'll be coming out in June also. And it's pretty amazing to me that a fella that close to someone that is well known could have never even been heard his entire life. But Charlie's story is that he got drafted into the Korean War, and that was right around the time that that Art's career started taking off, and just kept building momentum from there. But Charlie went to the Korean War, and when he returned, there was no work in East Kentucky. There still is no work in East Kentucky. But he moved to Chicago and worked in a manufacturing plant for his entire career, and then just moved back to Kentucky after he retired. And so he kept the fiddle all these years. He kept playing it, and is better than ever, but nobody ever heard him until this year. So I want to play you all some Charlie Stamper, because it's really pretty amazing fiddle music. And he also plays this instrument called a mouth bow that it's like a, you can imagine a little toy bow and arrow, but with a guitar string. And he uses his mouth as an aperture sort of on the string, and bows it with a fiddle bow at the same time. And all this is going on at once, and it sounds like aliens. Yeah, so here's a little bit of Charlie Stamper on the mouth bow, and see if you can recognize the tune. Yeah, I could do that. Nobody wants to hear a fiddle, though, do they? After that? No, I'm joking. So that was obviously the mouth bow without the fiddle bow, so it was a little less harsh on the ears. But here's a fiddle tune. We'll just do a minute or so of this. This is Cattle in the Cane from Charlie Stamper. Thank you. Yeah, he's got a, it's like every note is a slide. He's always going between notes.
Did you record him playing solo too without the accompaniment?
Yeah. There's actually more than we can release even on CD format, unfortunately. So we're going to work on that. And if there's two albums worth, then we're going to put them out because he's really great. So that's coming out in June, and it's pretty exciting. And for me, it's pretty crucial that these things are happening, that the first album on the label is being reissued, and then there's a new album coming out of a traditional music master that has never been heard before. I think it's a pretty good combination. But I'm basically here to tell you all that we're still here in the mountains making music. We've got a lot of material to draw from, and there are folks in the mountains making music today that's just as good as any of this stuff that's recorded.
Would you have time to play some of those younger ones that are making their own music?
Let me see if what I can find on here. Yeah, we could do that. I didn't necessarily bring that with me. And there's a lot of these young folks that actually haven't been properly recorded yet. It's a strange thing. It's right in front of our face.
You see, there's 80 LPs out, so you must have something.
Yeah, we got tons of stuff.
I'm sorry to be so impatient with this.
You're all right. I might make you wait a little bit longer on that. How about that?
Wait a little bit longer.
Yeah. So, there's 86 LPs, almost 87. I could tell you the names of some of those younger folks. Yeah. Well, you might have to come to Kentucky sometime. How about that? You got an open invitation. So.
Are the records that bad that you can't?
No, they're great. How about I open this up to you all, because I could just ramble about stuff and it wouldn't be that great. So I would love to hear questions from folks.
You haven't gotten enough from everybody?
Not yet. Go ahead.
When you're trying to get rid of the printer, did you try null test at all, or nulling it out?
Yeah, I did. Had some luck with that, but then it was still an issue of the noise floor, and it didn't sound natural. In my experience, I don't know what particular technique you're talking about. Nulling out just the bleed through?
Yeah, like the second track and burning it and then time the line into it.
Yeah. I tried that, but it was hard to separate what is the tape hiss from the bleed through, and I tried to maintain that constant noise floor, right? So that's how I arrived at what I did. Yeah. Well,
of course, nowadays in Pro Tools, if you want to work with that, there is that elastic time, and you can relatively easily deal with these changes in time that happen when you're with a real machine, analog machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth trying.
Yeah, thanks for that. An issue I encountered with that, though, is that the distance. As you get closer to the center of the tape, the distance changes between each layer. It's a constantly change in formula. And then isolating the bleed through frequencies to just null those out was an issue. Okay. Yeah, I'd worked with that some and didn't have a lot of success. So that's how I ended up at my approach. But thanks for that. It was issued on LP. Yeah, it's only currently available on cassette, and we offer it on cassette right now because that's the only format that it's available on. So that's another part of going through all these recording formats is you end up with warehouses full of cassette tapes, which is great. Not really. Okay, other questions? I'll play you a song.
Let's go.
So I didn't bring along any of the young folks or have it queued up on my computer for you all.
We're going to introduce this label.
Yeah, well, I do have another recording on the label by a lady named Addie Graham, who was from Magoffin County and also recorded a bunch of songs that no one else did. And so here's one. It's called Hungry and Faint and Poor. Got audio.
Hungry and faint and poor.
Okay, that's Addie Graham, and I don't want to leave you hanging on the young folks, so how about this? The first record on June Apple Records, June Apple number one, like I said, it ended up being a collaborative process with the producer, Jack Wright, and Nimrod, and his daughter, Phyllis. And so here's an example of a song that you all have probably heard before called Old Death, and this is Phyllis singing with Jack, the producer, playing guitar on it. How about that? And this is not Old Death.
Fail here to find it, though must travel on. Don't care for fine mansions on earth, sinking sand. Oh, build me a cabin in the corner of glory land. Oh, build me just a cabin in the corner of glory land. Shade of that tree of life that it may ever stand. Well, I can just hear the angels sing and shake Jesus' hand. Oh, build me a cabin in the corner of glory land.
Okay, so that was on the same record alongside Nimrod Workman singing 42 Years, which he wrote about being broke down in the coal mines. So it's a pretty interesting combination. And we're working on getting all this online on a website. Most of the artists on June Apple Records don't have websites. There's not much information online about them. So juneapple.org is going to be live by June, which is like 3 weeks away, which is crazy. And that's happening. You all can go there. And we're encouraging people that are familiar with this music and these artists to contribute to the site. And we're going to make it a conversational kind of experience for people so you can experience this music and add your two cents to it. So thank you all for the time. And come see us in Whitesburg.